Chapter 8. Hweg Shul, Nam Cherios.
Ben decided that he'd never seen a town quite like Hweg Shul. Not that he'd seen much more than a few meters of it at a time. The driving wind and the dust storm that blanketed the town made any comprehensive overview impossible. And the intense cold, threatening to strip heat right out of his body despite his winter cloak and insulated clothes, made him happy to scurry with Luke and Vestara from sheltered spot to sheltered spot, without much time for sightseeing. But Ben did have time to see the disparity of architecture in the town. The majority of dwellings and businesses were built on stilts or pilings. Some wood, mostly permacrete. A few of Durasteel coated in corrosion-resistant ceramics. These stilts tended to be a meter and a half to 2 meters high. The buildings themselves, permacrete or duroplast domes of various colors. Their foundations resting atop the stilts of sand-scoured permacrete. A meter up on the stilts, on most buildings, he could see bright glow rod modules, shining even at high noon. A measure against rocks, he assumed. The dome shapes were highly wind resistant, but their undersides, the flat permacrete foundations, were not. An occasional wind at the correct angle and speed would sweep under these elevated buildings, making lifting surfaces of the foundations. They did not actually lift off their stilts. They were too firmly attached for that. But the contact caused a succession of shuddering booms as the wind hit underside after underside in turn. It sounded like a city being strafed. These, his father had told him, were the newcomers' buildings. Less numerous and far older were the dwellings and businesses of the old-timers, often built with angled walls or even trapezoidal shapes to keep the winds from hammering them constantly at right angles. They were made of stone, covered with stucco, or, in the case of more shanty-like dwellings, cast-off duroplast covered in stucco. The stucco itself, like the materials the newcomers' buildings were made of, was wind-scoured. Viewports on both types of buildings were small patches of transparasteel, usually scratched by sand until they better served as diffusers rather than emitters of light. Ben quickly realized that the homes of the wealthier residents of town were characterized by transparasteel panels that were regularly replaced or polished, and thus more transparent than those in the less wealthy homes. And everything, at least indoors, had a faint, not too offensive, chemical smell. It was sweetish, a little cloying. Ben didn't recognize it or know what it was until he unpacked his duffel and, at his father's suggestion, sprayed down his clothes and the bag interior with the Drock repellent he'd been provided at Koval Station. That was the smell. Every plastoid surface, whether it be chamber walls, carpet, or furnishings, was coated or imbued with something to keep the Drocks at bay. His father led the three of them out of the Admirable Admiral, the hostel where they'd taken two adjoining rooms, and through the streets of this wind tunnel masquerading as a town. Again, Ben raised his voice to a shout in order to be heard.
Looking for something, Dad? Why not use the town directory?
What we're looking for isn't in the directory. I know. I looked.
That got Vistara's attention.
What is it?
Theron listeners.
Ben shook his head.
I thought they were the planet's healers. Why don't they advertise? It's not like they're the Black Sun.
Computers and data grids are newfangled. Not to their liking.
Luke spotted something that must have looked promising to him. He headed in that direction. Ben and Vistara followed. It was, to all outward appearances, an old-timer's hovel. Larger than most, but with light shining out through every hazy viewport. It was unlike many such buildings, set back from the street with a few aging land speeders and speeder bikes parked outside, rocking in the wind.